From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
We're here today to stand up against Daniel Ortega and his constant pursuit of gaining absolute political control over the Nicaraguan people.
That was Representative Albio Cires, Democrat from New Jersey, at a session of the U.S. House of Representatives this past October 3rd. Under consideration was the so-called NICA Act, or more formally, the Nicaraguan Investment Conditionality Act, which would hold back at least $61 million in funding that was previously guaranteed to Managua.
H.R. 1918 calls on the U.S. government to oppose loans at international financial institutions for Nicaragua unless the Nicaraguan government takes an effective steps to hold free, fair, and transparent elections and commits to upholding democratic principles.
Representative Cires himself described in plain language what was driving the effort and who was really being targeted.
If you need any more convincing of his intentions, Ortega continues to strongly defend Nicolás Maduro, the Venezuela dictator whose regime shoots unarmed protesters in the streets, jails the opposition, dissolves Congress, and has brought what should be one of the richest countries in Latin America to the brink of collapse.
It was also a bipartisan effort. This was Representative Ileana Ross Lentinen, Republican from Florida, representing the Miami area.
The Russians have set up operations in Managua. They're proud of it. They put it on the front pages. And that poses a threat to U.S. national security interests.
Well, this past Sunday, elections were held in Nicaragua again. And we take a close look at that with our reporter from south of the border, Tony Solo. Well, Tony?
The elections were very quiet, overwhelmingly peaceful, tranquilo, as they say here. The Organization of American States had a team of what they call observers accompanying the elections, and the Nicaraguan authorities prefer to speak here in terms of electoral accompaniment.
Right. Well, they invited them, right? The U.S. was, you know, they just passed the NICA Act. They've been working on that since the Obama administration. And although it hasn't been signed yet by President Trump, but the Congress has shown that it's likely to be, very likely to be approved. So the President Ortega invited, say, hey, you don't think our elections are going to be fair? Send in your OAS. And, of course, Your OAS is the Organization of American States, which is based in Washington, D.C., and operates at the instructions of the United States government.
Yeah, a very strong contrast between the position of Luis Almagro, the Secretary General of the Organization of American States, who's been so viciously opposed to and determined to intervene in the internal political affairs of Venezuela.
Right.
Completely contrary to both the spirit and the letter of the Organization of American States.
Right.
And he's actually encouraged the most violent segments of the Venezuelan opposition, whereas
right.
And really early on this year, back in whenever it was, April, May, he was in conversations with the authorities here, and I think he actually visited Managua and had a meeting with President Daniel Ortega and Rosario Murillo, the vice president. And they seem to have got on basically on extremely cordial terms. And they agreed this delegation, which is one of the biggest delegations that the Organization of American States has ever sent, certainly to Nicaragua, and certainly for relatively low-level elections like these municipal elections.
Yeah, you know, see, this is the problem I have with diplomacy sometimes. You know, kudos to President Ortega and his partner. But, you know, if this guy dropped by my house after what he's essentially had a hand in doing in Venezuela, you know, when the camera saw him come out, they'd be wondering, where did those bruises come from? How come he's staggering? And what's the stars and the little parakeet tweeting around his head all about?
Because
he has done some horrible things. And also, just for so people know, as the U.S. has been playing around with this, you know, because the United States is behind what he's doing, what OAS does and everything, they have been treating Nicaragua and Venezuela together. They have a hearing, and the first half is on Venezuela, and the second half is on Nicaragua. So, right. You know, you can see that, that what they would like is the same kind of crisis that they've provoked in Venezuela to be, you know, in the immediate future, if possible, of Nicaragua.
Yeah, they've got no chance in Nicaragua. And just to give you some idea, in Managua, the capital of Nicaragua, where getting on for half Nicaragua's population of around 6 million live, the FSLN are currently winning on after the second preliminary report by the Supreme Electoral Council here with 83% of the vote. You know, and that what the for the United States to try and intervene and kind of make Daniel Ortega unpopular or make Rosario Murillo unpopular is they're insane.
Well, that's why the attack on economic and financial interests. In other words, the NECA Act, in essence, what they hope it's going to do is to start interfering with Nicaragua's access to international capital markets. That's, so they're trying to provoke an economic crisis like the one they've been successful at provoking in Venezuela. Something else different in Nicaragua, of course, is the buy-in of the petty bourgeoisie and even the national bourgeoisie, because they're also doing well under the current conditions. Everybody's making money in Nicaragua pretty much right now.
What Daniel Ortega and his fellow FSLN Sandinista Party strategists decided way back in the time when people... leftists were criticizing Daniel for what they called the pacto, the agreement
right.
with Arnoldo Alemán.
Right.
And do you remember that? And it seems like ancient history now. But what that all meant was that Ortega was determined to build a kind of impregnable consensus, because in order to break what back then in around 2000 to 2006 was seemed like an inherent structural right-wing majority as long as the right wing stayed united. So in the 2006 elections, the right wing split, and that gave Daniel Ortega and the Frente Sandinista the chance to get into office, if
right.
not power.
Right.
And then over the next 5 years, they managed to through, it has to be said, the most difficult economic international climate since the 1920s. You know, the crisis of 2008, 2009.
1930s, maybe.
The economy contracted 3% like the rest of Central America in 2009.
Right.
But the government survived that largely thanks to support from President Hugo Chavez of Venezuela, who enabled the Nicaraguan government between 2008 and 2011 to sustain its social programs via essentially deficit spending, thanks to funding from via the ALBA structure, the Bolivarian Alliance of the Americas structure. Mm. And then in 2011, Daniel won with over 60% of the vote. And ever since then, elections here have been incredibly boring.
Yeah, I mean, you had the support from Venezuela and from the other ALBA countries too, but from Venezuela, both in the form of the kind of direct support you mentioned, you know, the buying the bonds, whatever mechanisms they use to help fund the deficit. Also, though, the favorable terms that Venezuela was making petroleum available to, other nations in the region. Here, take the oil, give us a half if you can afford that or whatever, and then the rest of it, pay us back later when you can afford it, but you can invest it in your own country instead, and then you don't have to pay us back. Things like that help float Nicaragua through the crisis. So now you're looking at, next time around, they're trying to take Venezuela out, so when they come after Nicaragua, there won't be Venezuela to bail them out.
Well, but the situation has changed radically in economic terms here. And as we were saying before, we were talking before we started recording, and while the international economic situation for a small, vulnerable country like Nicaragua is always difficult, and perhaps even precarious.
Right.
And the domestic economy is extremely robust.
Yes.
With very strong indices of production, strong indices of consumption, employment's improving, record exports, very extensive diversification of the economy, strong technology investments from Asian countries like South Korea and Taiwan. You know, and that the situation, if you compare it with 10 years ago, with 2008, and now the end of 2017 going into 2018, then Nicaragua's economy has been transformed.
Yeah, here's the tell, right? I mean, the tell is this, that they're not only going after Venezuela. In other words, okay, let's negate Venezuela as a means of support for Nicaragua. That won't suffice because Nicaragua is now standing on its own 2 feet, maybe three. It's so stable, and so they have to also come after Nicaragua to try to undo that, because God forbid you have that kind of a model operating successfully in the region, as an example.
Yeah, and I think it's worth emphasizing the importance of Petrocaribe.
Yes.
Because it's the Caribbean nations that have essentially foiled attempts by the United States to invoke the Inter-American Charter, the so-called Inter-American Charter, in the Organization of American States. It was their votes that prevented that. Why did these small Caribbean island nations defy the most important economic and military power on the planet? You know, what was that about? Well, it was all about Petrocaribe, which is the Venezuelan program to protect the energy security and also to, in many cases, the food security of small Caribbean island nations.
Right.
Now, with the decision of the International Court of Justice back in at the end of 2012 to award a huge area, 91,000 square kilometers or something, of maritime territory to Nicaragua after a decades-long dispute between Colombia and Nicaragua about who owned all that maritime area, maritime territory, Nicaragua is now a Caribbean state.
Right.
And so Nicaragua is also very influential in the relations with CARICOM, for example, the Caribbean community. And so the combined diplomacy of Venezuela and Nicaragua in the Caribbean is a big diplomatic problem for the United States. And we saw how effective Nicaragua's and Venezuela's diplomacy was in that defeat of the U.S. attempt in the OAS to isolate Venezuela. They failed miserably.
Yeah. And also, so, you know, looking at, you know, what has happened over the, for people to understand who this is, 12 of the 15 CARICOM members are part of Petrocaribe. Barbados, Montserrat, and Trinidad and Tobago are not. And particularly in the case of Barbados, you can figure out why. It essentially got instructions from Washington. But otherwise, Antigua, Barbuda, the Bahamas, Belize, Cuba, Dominica, Dominican Republic, Grenada, Guyana, Jamaica, St. Lucia, St. Kitts, all of them, and Venezuela and Suriname, all are part of this, and St. Vincent and the Grenadines, and then Haiti and Nicaragua joined.
I think Santa Lucia had elections, and a right-wing government got in.
And they're out too. That's right. They came out too, and because also that's what happened with the coup in Honduras, because Honduras had joined, and then they left after the coup, and then they rejoined it. Though the circumstances is the phenomenon we've been talking about that. Regardless of whether the U.S. gets control of a government or not, or in any event, the local right wing gets control of a government or not, the economic condition is so much more favorable with close coordination of the economies, regional integration, and the protection of the group as against the U.S. In other words, sovereignty and integration are so useful to the member nations that even the ones who are politically opposed to the project have to join it because their own people will want to know, how come I don't have any bread when all I got to do is go over to that basket?
Right, right. Yeah, and so in terms of returning to these municipal elections here in Nicaragua, and that they reflect the tremendous stability that Venezuela's support has given Nicaragua over the last decade.
Yep.
And so and you see you can it's not difficult to imagine how important that effect is in small Caribbean island nations who are even more vulnerable than a Central American country like Nicaragua.
Right. I mean, you're seeing in essence like 80% or better buy-in based on and regardless of what the United States wants. And these are all, you know, the population of some of these countries is less than most states in the United States, and their economies reflect that. And yet they're just standing up and saying, look, this is what we're doing. Go away.
Right. Yeah, so I'm going back to these elections, and they're very similar in many respects to the results of the elections in Venezuela. With an even more dominant showing by the Sandinista, the Frente Sandinista, the Sandinista political party.
Yeah.
Because, and there are 153 municipalities in Nicaragua. It's likely, as I think you said, I think you mentioned this there. The projection is that the Frente Sandinista may win as many as 140 of those municipalities. It already seems clear that they've won all the major urban centers, including, very importantly, the city of Bilwi, formerly known as Puerto Cabezas. Bilwi is the Miskito name, the indigenous people's name for that city. And they it looks as though the Frente Sandinista have won there, too, against their bitter enemies, the local Miskito party known as Yatama, which the Yatama party led by Brooklyn Rivera tries to project an image that they're the only important representative of Miskito opinion in that part of Nicaragua, Nicaragua's northeastern Caribbean coast. And that's simply not true. And a lot of Miskito opinion supports the Frente, the Sandinista Front. And that would explain why they've won in Bilwi. And there's no way that accusations of fraud are going to stick in this election, which have been accompanied as we said earlier by one of the biggest delegations that the Organization of American States have sent out to a country like Nicaragua ever. You know, they had something like 60 very highly qualified electoral specialists, and they were backed up, and they, as they themselves have acknowledged, with all the support they required from the Nicaraguan authorities.
You know, I just want to interrupt you for 1 second, because while you're talking and you know, I'm listening to what you're saying, I'm searching for the returns for yesterday's election on Google. So I keyed in a number of things, including the last one, Nicaragua 2017 election. And it didn't have a mention on the first page of yesterday's election. I had to type in 2017 election results, still didn't do it. And then filter it to past 24 hours. Google does not want people to know this. That's my point. What you're talking about, Google doesn't want anybody to know.
Right. But that's so typical, isn't it? The coverage in the Western corporate media is going to completely screen out this tremendous success by the Sandinista Front here in Nicaragua, because it's from their point of view, it's bad news.
Yep.
They'd rather have chaos and destruction of the kind that we've seen in Syria over the last, what is it, 5-6 years?
Yeah, since 2011. I mean, they had the referendum for the constitution and the presidential election in 2011. Turn out that the U.S. hasn't seen in a national election probably ever. And, you know, they it didn't matter. The Constitution was undemocratic, and there was no right for Bashar al-Assad to be president whatsoever, that he should be banished from planet Earth or whatever, which they tried to do. They've been trying to do that, too.
Yeah. And here in Nicaragua, the turnout for these elections is around 53%, something like that, which is low by Nicaraguan standards, but that just goes to show how participatory Nicaragua's democracy is.
Yeah.
Because, and if you look at elections, similar elections, even in national elections in countries like the United Kingdom and the United States, and what are the levels of participation there? Between 55 and 60% in those national elections? But and in Britain,
less than that, in their
general elections, Tony Blair, he got in, there was a total electoral participation of under 50%. Then Tony Blair and New Labour used to win those elections with, say, 26% of the vote.
Yep, yeah, exactly.
You know, 26%, and then they go around telling the rest of the world how to run their democracy.
The United States has a population of about 330 to 340 million people, according to the official numbers. And the winning candidate of the president for president of the United States last year had something like 62 million votes.
Right.
Okay. I don't care. You could have, well, the rule, there's so many of them are children, the rules for who's eligible, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, okay, fine. You've got, though, 61 over 330. That's the turnout.
Right.
So it's hardly a mandate.
Yeah, you and I are weary of commenting on the sheer hypocrisy of Western leaders like, with Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, or Trump, Donald Trump, President Trump, or Theresa May, or Tony Blair, or any of them, Merkel. And they have no business telling the rest of the world how to be democratic, because they aren't democratic.
Right, exactly. Yeah?
And they depend on their oligarchies to be able to control a political system that essentially screens out real national opinion, and that's why they were so surprised by the election of Trump and the election that referendum result in Britain. What was it? The Brexit vote.
Brexit.
And why they were so surprised by the very strong showing of somebody who's previously been regarded as kind of a complete outsider, like Jeremy Corbyn in the United Kingdom.
Yeah, well, Le Pen, for example, in France, regardless of her politics, she's an oppositional politician and was definitely in the running, out of the margins and in the center of things only a year ago. I mean, the whole political condition is in you know, turmoil, to put it kindly.
Yeah, and whereas in Nicaragua, in terms of the Central American region, is a beacon of stability.
here's something out of Alianza News. The Nicaraguan Opposition Alliance claimed that nearly 80% of the electorate did not participate.
Well, that's just ridiculous.
You know, then and there was another story. This is newsforeurope.eu. So this isn't one of the, you know, right wing echo chambers. And they're talking about Nicaragua's ruling Sandinista National Liberation Front was leading in at least 148 of the country's 153 municipalities following the elections, according to preliminary results. Votes from 33.62% of the polling stations were counted on Sunday's election, and that's, you know, what's been happening. And this came out of the Supreme Electoral Council being reported through newsforeurope.eu.
The opposition claims they're going to claim fraud, right?
Right.
But they were the ones that wanted the Organization of American States to supervise the elections, and then to their surprise, President Ortega said, "Yeah, sure, why not?"
Come on down.
And if the Organization of American States validates these elections, as they will,
they have to.
Where does that leave the Nicaraguan opposition? I just they leave me speechless because they're so inept.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the situation that they face is difficult, which, you know, we're not dealing with gods. We're dealing with human beings to, you know, be charitable to them. And yet, the conditions are just so, you know, their whole thing is falling apart in front of us. You know, the driving economic forces that fueled it, you know, they're in a state of irreconcilable contradiction at this point where it doesn't function anymore. They have to do something else. They don't know what to do. They don't know what they have in terms of, even with all the information they have on all of us, everything that we do and say every day and all of that, however they can process it, they don't know what to do and what's going to be possible to bail themselves out. In other words, to continue to hold power under new conditions because it's not possible to do so under the present, the old conditions. And they, so, of course, they're fumbling it.
and that explains why members of the Nicaraguan opposition traveled to Washington to have meetings with Ileana Ros-Lehtinen. Very similar to the way the Venezuelan opposition supported U.S. government sanctions against their own country.
Right.
Some leaders of the, especially the social democrat centrist Nicaraguan opposition, welcomed the legislation proposed by Ileana Ros-Lehtinen, known as the NICA Act, which, because that's, they have nowhere else to go. And they have no support nationally, so they're looking overseas to potential measures that might affect somewhere down the line support for Daniel Ortega over the next 3, 4, 5 years. But, and it's, if you look at the NICA Act, and I haven't read it, you have, haven't you?
Yeah, well, I've got it here, yeah.
As I understand it, the central provisions are to restore democracy in Nicaragua, and if they don't restore democracy in Nicaragua, then they're going to make U.S. government representatives in international financial institutions block future loans to Nicaragua. Well, and how effective is, and firstly, there's the insanity of saying that they need to restore democracy in Nicaragua. What are they talking about when their own Ministry of the Colonies, the Organization of American States, is in the country validating these elections? What are they talking about? They have, and only in the United States could the country's legislators take seriously that kind of ridiculous, egregiously false argument. Again, that somehow democracy is lacking in Nicaragua.
Right. Well, see, you have to look to their definition of democracy, because if you read the act and the amendment, the actual democratic issue that they have is that in 2006, under Enrique Bolaños, is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Okay. When he was president of Nicaragua, the country entered into a $175 million five-year agreement with Millennium Challenge Corporation. And then after the 2008 elections, that party they were in contract with decides to say the other party is out of compliance with the contract because there's been a pattern of decline in political rights and civil liberties in Nicaragua. So what they do in 2009 after the 2008 municipal elections is basically terminate the agreement.
Yeah.
And reduce the amount of money available under it by $61.5 million. So what they're doing is trying to tank the new government.
Yeah, and they failed miserably. And the European Union, at the same time, in 2009, when the Nicaraguan economy was contracting by 3% over that year, the European Union cut around $42, $43 million of development cooperation funding, making a total of $100 million that was cut by the European Union and the United States at a time when Nicaragua's the Nicaraguan government's annual budget was barely $1 billion, $1,000 million.
Right, they were clearly targeting it, and this is, you know, Venezuela steps into the void, as do the folks around the Caribbean. Nicaragua gets propped up, gets to solve its problems, and now it stands ready to help those who get similarly targeted. And we got to stop here. And I guess we didn't get to talk about a lot of other stuff, which we'll get to next week.
Okay, thanks a million. Have a good week.
Yep. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.